This Torah class is brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.
Okay, Bruchim Abom, welcome everybody. You know, everything in this world has hashgacha. This is actually our first Wednesday night here in the new location. I don't know if this is going to be a regular venue, but if you guys come here, we could do it here. But the hashgacha is that for a while we were trying to get Wi-Fi in the new shul, and Verizon was not coming. And actually Verizon came yesterday. Yesterday I had no idea I would need the Wi-Fi today. So they were here the entire day yesterday, and I got a call this morning that we can't give the shiur in the Young Israel because they're having security training, I don't know, something like that, and we need a location for the shiur. So Baruch Hashem, Hashem always prepares the refuah right before the makkah. So the shiur on Sefer Bamidbar are sponsored by Dr. Zakheim, Umishpachta, Le'ilei Nishmas, Rav Shlomo Eliezer ben Rav Yaakov Zakheim, and Le'ilei Nishmas, Dr. Zakheim's mother, Rivka Bas Tuvia Halevi, and by Yedidi Rabbi Isaac Yosilovsky, Lenishmas, Rabbi Isaac's father, Shabsi ben Yitzchak Isaac, Began Eden, Tehim, and Uchasim, Shabbi Melissa Yisharm for the whole family, Adbias Goel Tzedek. Tonight's Shir is sponsored by my dear friend and neighbor, Dr. Menachem Fuchs. It's my very close Shachin Toiv, Chaver Toiv, and close with the whole Mishpacha of Chachomim, and Bnei Torah. So it's Lila Nishmas, Rabbi Menachem Yishaya's Zeda, Yehuda, then Yishaya Halevi, Began Eden, Tehim and Uchasai, Shvi Amelis Yosha for his whole family, for Simchas and Achas, Abiyas Gal Tzedek. Also tonight's shir is sponsored by my good friend Reb Zev Fanfeder, Lila Nishmas, his father-in-law, Meir Simcha ben Yitzchak Zev, whose yard site is Gimel Tammuz. When's Gimel Tammuz? Tomorrow's Aleph. Very good. And Ari Leib, you know, somebody was listening to a shir today on Masechta Sukkah, on the sugya of Doifin Akuma, that we gave like 6 years ago, about the Machloikis, Rashi, and the Ritva. And they heard your voice on it. And they said to me, that was such a mishra. I hope, they were talking about you because you're around the shir. I hope he still comes to the shir. Just, he doesn't know who you are, he doesn't know. Okay. Anyway, here we go. Today's shir is really out of the box. This is what I call a Shvilei Pinchas special. The title of the shir is Korach's Bad Hair Day. Okay, so here we go. Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kohos ben Levi v'dalson v'aviram b'nei Eliyav v'oin ben Pelas b'nei Ruvain. Korach took. Who's Korach? The son of Yitzhar. Who's Yitzhar? The son of Kohos. Who's Kohos? The son of Levi. And who's Levi? Doesn't tell you. We don't know who Levi is. Rashi says, everybody knows Levi is Ben Yaakov. So why don't we say Ben Yaakov? Because Yaakov davened that what? Bikola maltechad kevoidi. In my congregation, my name should not, in their congregation, my name should not be associated. In other words, Yaakov Avinu said, I don't want to be associated with the Maisa of Korach. Leave me out of this. Question number one. Why was Yaakov Avinu so hesitant to have his name mentioned in the episode of Korach? Did he say, God, leave me out of the Maisa of the Meraglim? He didn't say, leave me out of the story of the Meraglim. Did he say, leave me out of the story of the Mesoinenim? Yaakov Avinu didn't say, leave me out of the Mesoinenim, leave me out of the Meraglim. Why specifically the episode of Korach did Yaakov Avinu have this apathy, this disgust that he did not want to be mentioned in association with the story of Korach? What caused Korach's downfall? So there's an amazing Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer says, if let's say your great-grandfather, his name is Stalin, or his name is Nebuchadnezzar, and you have a little baby, what should you name your kid? She said, well, the Zayda's name is Nebuchadnezzar. The Zayda's name is Titus. Should you name your kid Titus? Yeah, and the Elta mother-in-law wants, the grandfather wants you to name Titus. Now, you can't give the name. Why? What? Oh. I'm muted. Okay, we're back on. If, What if the family wants you to give the name of these Rishayim? No. you got to let the name rot. V'shem Rishayim Yerkov. The name of the wicked should rot. So says Chasam Sofer, I have a great tema, I have a great question on the tzaddikim, the B'nai Levi, to give the name Koirach. Koirach? Are you kidding me? You're going to call him Koirach? Koirach is the name of one of the chieftains of Esav. So how could the B'nai Levi name the kid Koirach? If you remember, Parashas Vayishlach, Eila Alufei B'nai Esav, B'nai Alifaz, B'chor Esav, Aluf Teiman, Aluf Oymar, Aluf Tzifai, Aluf Kenaz, Aluf Koirach. Koirach, the name was Koirach. So the name, if the name of the sons of Esav are Koirach, you got to be at a... How could you give the name Koirach? Says the Chasam Sofer, that's probably why Koirach fought against Moshe Rabbeinu. You know what influenced him? His bad name. His name caused him. Says the Chasam Sofer, that's how you read the Pasuk. Vayikach Koirach. The name Koirach took away all of his Kedusha. Vayikach Koirach. Aye, what do you mean? He's Ben Yitzhar, Ben Kohas, Ben Levi. He comes from a Shalsheles of three generations of holy Leviim? No! The fact that he was named after a Rasha, it took everything away. That's how the Chasam Sofer understands it. He says, Zeh Hashem Koirach, Lokach Esakol. Chasam Sofer wonders, Ani Toma, Alat Tzadikim. I wonder about these righteous people that they would give the kid the name Koirach. Says the Chasam Sofer, my opinion, that name is responsible for Koirach's whole downfall.
He doesn't answer why they did.
No. Chasam Sofer, it's a tema. It's a wonder how they could give such a name. By the way, the Chasam Sofer doesn't just say this in his Sefer Ala Torah, but in his Tshuvas, in Evan Ezer, Simen Beis, Simen Chaf Beis, Chasam Sofer says, you know, the B'nai Levi also called the kid Zima. What does Zima mean? Oh, you shafel up. Zima means promiscuity. You know? Luid. That's not a nice name. Call a kid Zima. Says the Chasam Sofer, maybe the B'nai Levi didn't know the teaching of the Gemara that Rav Meir taught on the Pasuk. Asher sum shamois ba'aretz, al tikri shamois, ela shamois, that shamois have an effect. Clearly they didn't pay too much attention to names because they called their kid Koirach. But the question still begs being asked, what were they thinking? I mean, you don't have, it's not rocket science. Why would you name your kid? Nobody would name their kid Titus, even though in Israel today, I think Nimrod is a very popular name. But that's, you know, leave it to them to come up with these names. But nevertheless, why would these tzaddikim call this individual Koirach? Okay, so now we're going to analyze something very interesting. There is a very common theme in the parsha, and the theme is quite unusual. There was a man by the name of Oyin ben Peles, and he got sucked into Koirach's dispute, and he swore his allegiance to Koirach. And he was headed out the door one day, and Mrs. Oyin ben Peles, she said, where are you going? He said, I'm going to join Koirach against Moshe. So you're out of your mind. What do you gain? What do you gain? You're going to be the president? Either way, you're going to be executive vice president. What does executive vice president mean? Nothing. Right? So you're going to be either way executive vice president. Either Moshe is going to be the president, or Koirach is going to be president. And you're going to be some kind of title that they invented so that, you know... Sorry. So Mrs. Oyin ben Peles basically said, you have nothing to gain. She said, what am I supposed to do? I already swore allegiance to Koirach. So she said, don't worry. Drink some bourbon. So she poured him some alcohol, and he drank, and he fell asleep. And she said, look, one thing I know, these guys must be real frummies. If there's politic, then you know these guys are quote-unquote holy frum guys. So the one thing they're not going to do, they could try to start and up with Moshe. Api Karson they could be, but Frum they could definitely be. So therefore, I'm going to uncover my hair, which we know that a woman is biblically obligated when she's married to have her hair covered. A man cannot say Dvarm Sheba Kedusha in the presence of the hair of a woman that's uncovered. Can't learn, you can't say Kiddush, in the presence of the hearer of a woman that's a married woman that's uncovered. There's no way these frumis are going to look at my hearer. So be an apikoyres, that they have no problem with. Start up with Moshe Rabbeinu, no. But look at a woman, no, there's no chance. She nailed it, right? She knew for sure. If these guys are starting up with a rabbi, they must be really frum, right? And she uncovers her hair, and they're walking by the door, and they say, oh, no, no, they took off their glasses, and they ran away. Meanwhile, they all got swallowed by the ground, and Oyin ben Peles was saved. So what saved Oyin ben Peles? The hair, the uncovered sheitel of Mrs. Oyin ben Peles. What kind of sheitel she had, we don't know. Chazal don't tell us. But she uncovered her hair, and she saved the day. Okay. What caused Korach to rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu? Do you remember the pasuk in Parshas Bahaloscha, the third pasuk? In the second pasuk it says, Ka'aches ha-Leviyim mitoich b'nei Yisrael v'tiar toisam, purify the Leviyim. This shir today is a good shir for Leviyim. Now, if you wanted to be inaugurated as a Levi, you would line up in front of Moshe. Moshe had his shaver going. He didn't ask what number. It all came off. The hair, the head, the beard, the eyebrows, the eyelashes, every last hair on the body, until the guy looked like a bald eagle. You know the thing on the dollar bill? You look bald as a bat, as however you want to call it. Like a doorknob. Not one single hair on the head. And that's how the Leviim were inaugurated. And with a razor. Right? No scissors. Yeah? That means Korach stood there. And he came in with a long white beard. He had long. He came out bald. Nobody knew who he was. Who are you? What are you? Who's this guy? I'm Korach. Nah, come on, you're not Korach. Nah, I'm Korach. Moshe shaved me bald. Now, Korach turns around, and there's Aaron HaKohen. Aaron's there with his long beard, with his curled payas. Aaron's wearing the choshen, the urim betumim, the tzitz. Aaron looks like a million bucks, and Korach looks like, I don't know, he came from some country in Africa or something, or some other place. I don't. So, but Korach says, what's going on over here? Your brother, he looks like, the King of England, and I look like a schlepper. And they started mocking Korach. And not only that, they said, who are you? I'm Korach. Korach, what happened to you here? Moshe shaved it off. And what do you do to Aaron? Aaron looks like a million bucks. Then Korach said, you know what else he did? He waved me. He took my foot, and he waved me like a chicken. He did kaparis on me. So first he shaves me bald. What am I, a chicken? He takes off the hair, he cuts off the hair, then he... Zechalifasi, Zetmurasi, Zechabra. Korach said, Aaron HaKohen is sitting there with these rubies and diamonds and gems, and you could ask him a question. He has a golden thing on his head, and I look like Empire Chicken. So it's interesting. What was the source of Korach's rebellion against Moshe? A bad haircut. And what saved Oyin ben Peles' wife? Well, Oyin ben Peles, the fact that she uncovered her hair. So hair is a very important theme in Parshas Korach. The hair of Mrs. Oyin ben Peles saved the day. And Korach's bad hairdo was the cause of his rebellion. So now let us try to understand, what is the meaning of hair? This is going to be a very hairy topic. Haha. Now, Barbanel says, what does hair represent? What is the symbolism of hair? You can't trim your nose. You need a nose. No? You need to smell. You can't trim your ears. You can't cut off other parts of the body. Hair is expendable. You don't need hair. It's a luxury, You don't need it. Maybe it makes you look a little bit better. But it's not needed. Hair represents luxury. Hair is excess. It's something you could be without. In fact, interestingly, the Abarbanel writes, he says, the symbolism of shaving the hair of the Levium is to indicate their dedication to Hashem and their separation from moisrois. You know what moisrois are? Luxury. Or sometimes in Hebrew we call it luxus. Luxus is luxury. Okay. That is why the Levim had their hair shorn. The Arvei Nachar of David Ivshitz says hair represents moisrois. Says Rav Yonasan Ivshitz, where does hair grow? Where in the body does hair grow? The sweatier the place, the more hair. Because the more the excess liquid, the more sayar. So hair represents excess. That's why in Chazal, when you talk about a fool, hair is considered shoita. It's just symbolic of involvement in moisturis. Therefore, here you got a nazir. The nazir spent 30 days separating from the pleasures of this world. No wine for 30 days. What did he make Kiddush on? What? I don't know. There's nothing he could do. He couldn't make Kiddush on wine. Now, he spent 30 days separating from the pleasures of this world. Before he lands and comes back to reality, what we need to do is we need to tell him, listen, before you come back to the pleasures of this world, shave off all your hair as a symbolism that you're taking your Nazira seriously and you're, for good, significantly separating from the pleasures of this world. That is why a melech takes a daily haircut. Why does the king take a daily haircut? Because since he's in danger of getting caught up with his money and his wives and his horses, so we want him to keep himself in check, to take a daily haircut as a symbolism to separate from the excess of this world. And a Kohen Gadol took a haircut how often? Every week. Also, to indicate, because of his greatness, separating from the pleasure, the excess of this world. But Korach was very into his money. Who was the richest Jew who ever lived? Korach. Really? What did he do for a living? There were no nursing homes. So what did Korach do? Because, what did he do? Real estate? What exactly did Korach do? He sold bitcoins. You know? What did Korach do? So we're going to see Korach was the richest Jew in the history of this world. And because he was so caught up in his money, he would mock the haircut that Moshe Rabbeinu gave him. Why are you taking away my dear hair? I need my hair. I need my excess. I need my luxury. In fact, the Gemara in Pesachim says, there are three great repositories of wealth in this world. I once had the pleasure of being in the Tower of London. And in the Tower of London, you could see all of the gold and silver and the crowns that they would bedeck the various kings and queens throughout history. The Chida actually visited the Tower of London, and the Chida commented that if this is the wealth Hashem gives the wicked, imagine the great reward that's in store for the righteous. In any event, the Gemara in Pesachim says the three great treasures in this world, Yosef had all of them. He hid them in Egypt. One Korach found, one Antoninus found, one the righteous will find, La'asad Lavai. Korach had so much money that he needed 300 white donkeys to carry the keys of his storehouses. Why white donkeys? Because if a white donkey gives you a kick, you're dead. There's no way to recover from the kick of a white donkey. So he needed 300 white donkeys just to carry the keys of his treasuries. And Korach was very into his money. And because he was so into his luxury and his excess, he ridiculed the haircut that Moshe Rabbeinu gave him, and it bothered him. He wanted that, you know, he wanted that excess in type of mode of behavior. Now, here is a Shvilei Pinchas classic. Because Korach was not the only person named Korach in Jewish history. There was a great man named Korach. Now let me give you a little clue. Who in Jewish history, who was actually Jewish, was known as a really hairy dude? And even, but who, like, from the time they were born, he's called hair. Esav. Esav is Ish Sa'ir. And what's Yaakov? Yaakov's, you know, you have some guys, they need to shave when they're 3 years old already. They already have facial. And some people, they're 50 and they're still waiting for it to come in. Right? Different kinds of, there's hairy people and there's not such hairy people. Esav was a hairy guy. Kulei Kadera Seyar, yeah? Yaakov Avinu is chalak, he's smooth. By the way, the Torah says, why was Yaakov kicking? Because Esav was getting him very itchy. So Esav's hair was that. That's why Jews are always itchy. It's Masayavo, Simon Labanim. Jews have eczema and skin. It's, you know, that's Yaakov started out. He's itchy. He's an itchy. Esav's hair is all over him. So Yaakov is known as the Ish Chalak. He's a smooth guy. He's not really hairy. Esav is very hairy. What does Korach mean, even? We have in Parshas Tazria. Kireachu. Do you know what Kireach means? Tzaraas. Kireach means bald. You know, there was one of the greatest people, if not the greatest tzaddik in history, was called bald. Says Ben Azai, all of the rabbis, they're like nothing to me. They're like the shell of a garlic, except for this Kireach, except for that bald guy over there. Who's he talking about? Says Rashi. You know, there's a Torah sage, Yeshua ben, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha. Anybody know who his father was? Who's Karcha? Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva was bald. And he was called Baldy. Rabbi Akiva was called Baldy. Tosfos asks, I mean, that's not the nicest name to refer to as Rabbi Akiva. Ben Azai is saying, the rabbis, they're nothing to me except for Baldy. I mean, why don't you say except for Rabbi, he's Rabbi Akiva to you, you know? Why are you calling him, Tosfos asks, why are you referring to Rabbi Akiva, Belashon Genai? I mean, isn't there a nice, call him Rabbi Akiva. Apparently, says the Shvilei Pinchas, there's also a connection between Rabbi Akiva and Yaakov Avinu. One connection may be, neither of them had too much hair. Yaakov was Ishchalak, Rabbi Akiva was bald. In fact, that Rizal says, the name. Anybody named Akiva over here? No. How do you spell Akiva? Ayin, Kuf, Yud, Vez, Hey, or Aleph? Kamza or Zarua? You know who the Arzarua is? Rabbi Yitzchak Mivina, one of the great Rishonim. By the way, the Arzarua tells a story about Rabbeinu Tam. I think next week's shir will be about Rabbeinu Tam. Actually, this week's shir was supposed to be about Rabbeinu Tam. There wasn't enough time. Rabbeinu Tam was a very wealthy man. You know how he would start off giving shir? Counting his money. And he'd say, oh, money makes you happy. Now we could learn. Very unusual. Most rabbis don't do that. Probably not recommended for a rabbi to take out a wad of bills and then count them and then give shir. But that's what Rabbeinu Tam did. We'll see. Actually, we have evidence. Rabbeinu Tam was so wealthy, he lent money to the king of France. That's how wealthy he was. The Arzarua writes that he was writing a sefer about Gittin, and he didn't know how to spell the name Akiva. So he had a dream, and in the dream they showed him the pasuk, Oyer, Zarua, Latzadik, Liyishrei, Lev, Simcha. And he saw that last letters spell Resh, Ayin, Kuf, Yud, Vez, Hey, Rabbi Akiva. Oh, that's how you spell Akiva, with a Hey. So he named his sefer Or Zeruah. We don't agree with him. We don't paskin like him. We don't follow that dream. We follow the Arizal. The Arizal says Rabbi Akiva is spelled with an aleph. Why? Look at number 26. Because the pasuk says, "Vateshev be'ison kashtoi vayafoizu zroye yadav midei avir Yaakov." Avir Yaakov spells out Rabbi Akiva with an aleph or a hey. Aleph. That's how we paskin. You see that? Avir Yaakov. From here we see there's a connection between the soul of Rabbi Akiva and the soul of Yaakov. What was their connection? Neither of them had too much hair. What was that symbolic of? That was symbolic of their separation from the excess and the luxury of this world. Yaakov Avinu particularly, he is running away from Esav. He says, "Im yeloikim imadi ushmarani baderech hazeh asher anochi holech venasan li lechem le'echol uvegel lobosh." God, give me bread to eat and clothing to wear. There's some extra words in this pasuk. God, give me bread to eat. What else do you do with bread? Give me clothing to wear. As opposed to what? Bread to wear and clothing to eat? He could just say, give me bread and clothing. And I think we all know what you do with bread and what you do with clothing. What's Yaakov saying? Give me bread to eat and clothing to wear. And Rabbeinu Bechai says something very important. He says that a person should never ask Hashem for luxury. One should only pray for necessity. Now, there might be an expanded definition of necessity. You know, does that mean, God, please, I want a slice of bread to eat for supper and a cup of milk every single day? So what, I can't have anything interesting to eat? I want to have a cardboard box to wear. You can't have enjoyable. I mean, is enjoyable food necessity? Is it luxury? I guess it depends for who. It depends what your state in life is. But in general, I have a car. Nah, I want a fully loaded luxury vehicle. Please, Hashem. Oh no, Hashem, Oishiyana. Everyone's screaming, "Oh no, Hashem!" What are they thinking? Ribbono shel Olam. Tesla, please. Please contact Elon Musk to send me a Tesla immediately. I'm desperate. Are you out of your mind? That's what you're diving for? So you shouldn't really pray for luxury. You pray for what you need. That's what Yaakov Avinu says. Ribbono shel Olam, please give me food to eat. Please give me clothing to wear. I don't need fancy, flashy. I just need my necessities. Yeah. Once a month, you know. Shlomo HaMelech says, "Hatrifeni lechem chuki." Give me my allotted... Yeah, that's why by Rosh Chodesh benching. Where does it say you should say that Rosh Chodesh? Nowhere. That's it. Everyone gets into that, right? Says Rabbeinu Bechaye, poverty and wealth are very difficult lots in life. Poverty and wealth are very difficult lots in life. If someone's poor, then they have the unfortunate task of trying to flatter the wealthy. Someone who's wealthy, he wants luxury. And if you go after luxury, you become arrogant. And you speak boldly. And when you become arrogant, you're an abomination to God. Now, what's a bigger challenge? Poverty or wealth? Wealth is a much bigger challenge. I know most people think, bring it on. Bring it on. I could handle it. Now, if you could handle it, God would have given you that challenge. Wealth is a much bigger challenge. Because if you're wealthy, you think you're smart. And you feel arrogant. And once you feel arrogant, you become an abomination. In this world, one should only seek what they need. And God gives all of creation what they need. Birds, they have what they need. You ever see a bird coming down, wearing shades, you know, wearing a nice, you know, jacket, sitting down with a little fork and knife, with like a nice little steak, you know, with pouring wine? The bird pecks at the garbage, eats a piece of bread, and goes to sleep. And then at 3 a.m., they're making a racket in my air conditioner or something. The birds in this neighborhood are very loud. But God gives man what they need. The more needed something is, the more available it is, the cheaper it is. The less something is needed, the less there is, the more expensive it is. What do you need less than anything? Jewels, diamonds, rubies. There are not so many of them around, and they're very expensive. What do you need more than anything? Air. So air, more than water. Water, you could go a few hours without water. You can't go a minute without air. So air is everywhere. Let's say you go up to the Catskills. Yeah, let me pack my air with me. You don't have to pack it with you. They haven't figured out a way. Okay, put in a quarter for your another dose of air. They haven't figured out a way to market, you know, smart air, clean air, purified air. They will. The day will come, you know, where they'll be selling, you know, air. You know, neutralized air, less acidic air. And then after air, you need water. So water is the next most available. Sometimes you have to pay for it. Sometimes you have to travel to it. Sometimes you have to turn something on. And after air, after water, food is needed. But there's less of food than there is water. And it's more expensive. You have to put in more effort. The more something is needed, the more available Hashem made it, the less it costs. Because Hashem is teaching us a lesson. I give you what you need. That's what you should focus on. Never get caught up in something that's expendable. If you don't need it, that should not be your ambition. So the question is, that's a very boring life. So now what? I'm supposed to eat? Okay. The ideal is, sit there, okay, breakfast, have a piece of bread, and I don't know what, some protein, an egg, and a cup of milk. And for lunch, I'm going to have peanut butter on bread. And supper, I'm going to have a piece of chicken. And that's it. Where's the side dish? You don't need a side dish, dear. The rabbi said at the shir, you only should be interested in necessities. So you don't need... Where's dessert? Dessert? Are you kidding me? We don't do dessert in this house. We only do what you need. So that's a very boring... Is that an exciting life? Imagine if you ate the same thing every single day, three times a day, without fail. Where do you get your kicks in life? Says Rabbeinu Bachaye, where do you get your kicks? You get your perks, you get your kicks from Yiras Hashem, from Avas Hashem, from spirituality. So Rabbi Akiva was called what? Baldy. Why was he a baldy? I don't know, I never saw him. I don't know if he actually was a kereach. But he was called that because of his separation from the excess and the luxuries of this world. Yeah, but everybody needs some hair. Oh, Rabbi Akiva was very into hair. Says the Gemara Menachos, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai. He saw somebody who knew Torah more than anybody else in this world. He was darshaning on every thorn of every letter of the Torah. I'll call koitz v'koitz, tilin til jalas. Every little thorn of the letters, Rabbi Akiva had a drasha. Say the mikubalim. That was Rabbi Akiva's hair. That was the hair Rabbi Akiva was into. He was into the details of ruchnias. That was his superfluity. That was his excess. That was what we say, that's not really important. Just tell me, yes or no. Is it mutter or asar? What are you telling me? This case, this smara, that smara. I really need to know it? Yeah, the minutia of spirituality is the hair you should be into. That was Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva in Gashmius, he was kireach, like Yaakov Avinu. And when it came to spirituality, every detail, every minutia, every little pitchifka was greatly significant to Rabbi Akiva. comes the Shvilei Pinchas. I think this is very creative and ga'inus. And he says something very interesting. The B'nai Levi foresaw that Korach would win the lottery. And we all know that people who win the lottery, they don't usually fare well. I don't know if that's actually true. I never met anyone who won the lottery. I actually don't believe that anybody ever won the lottery. They just, every few months, they report, oh, a guy over here in North Dakota won the lottery, but I never met them. I never met anyone who met them. I never saw anyone who met them. I never met anyone who claimed they know somebody who won the lottery. I mean, do you? You know someone who won the lottery? Anyone here? Anyone online know anyone who won the lottery? Not like $10. Yeah, a frum guy. But you know who he is? Nobody knows who he is. What shul does he daven in? Yeah? Get us his number. We had a campaign over here. You know someone who won the lottery?
Name's Kahan.
Kahan. Yeah. His name is his Weiss, right? Yeah. You know him? Borough Park. Yeah, there's only one Kahan in the whole Borough Park. But anyway, but they say that people who win the lottery, they don't fare well. You know, they lose all happiness in life and they, I don't know. And everybody says, bring it on. You know, I'll be the guy. But they foresaw that Korach would have a windfall. He would hit the jackpot. And he was in danger of getting caught up in the excess, the surplus of this world. So they wanted to give him a name to influence him not to get caught up in the luxuries of this world. So they figured, which tzaddikim reflect the ideal of not being into luxury, not being into excess? Yaakov Avinu, Rabbi Akiva. So they figured the best possible name to keep Korach in check is Korach. Maybe that will remind him not to get caught up in the excess of this world. Says the Shvilei Pinchas, maybe that's why Esav named the kid Korach. Because we know Esav is the king of hypocrisy. He said, look at me, forget I don't chew my cud. But I'm a frumi, I have split hooves. And I'm going to call my kid Tzaddik. You know what the most righteous name I could give my kid? Korach. So that's part of Esav's, you know, hypocrisy. Giving the name after, you know, not being indulgent in the excess of this world. So basically, who was Korach named after? Yaakov Avinu. So he went around saying, oh, I'm a righteous guy. I'm not into my money. I'm not into luxury. I'm not into excess. I'm kolayidu kulam kedoshim. I want to serve God, and I'm doing this l'shem shamayim. I'm like Yaakov Avinu. Korach said, I'm the heir to Yaakov. So Yaakov says, leave me out of this one. Don't blame your insanity. Don't blame your pursuit of kavod after me. Don't bring me into this. Yaakov Avinu specifically was mispalel. Because Yaakov Avinu knew that Korach is going to claim to be the spiritual heir of the ideals of Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov said, leave me out of this one. Meraglim, they're still my descendants. Mesoinanim, they're still my descendants. But Korach, he's taking my name as if he's my heir. He's going to call himself Baldy like I'm the Ish Chalak. No. Yaakov Avinu said, leave me out of this. Only me and Rabbi Akiva really reflect the ideal of separating from the pleasures of this world. This, says the Shvilei Pinchas, is perhaps the reason why the B'nai Levi gave the name Korach. They weren't naming him after the descendant of Esau, but they were trying to inculcate within him the ideal of Enasan li lechem le'echal u'beged l'lbosh. If there was ever a generation where the ambition in this world is for surplus, excess, luxury, we're living it. We're living it. I don't even think our grandparents had ambitions to want to have what we already have. So it's always good to remind ourselves of the tefillah of Yaakov Avinu. V'nasan li lechem Le'echel u'veged lilbosh. That the definition of our satisfaction in this world should be defined based on if we have what we need, not luxury, not excess, not surplus. If we do that, then we can glean a very important lesson from Parshas Korach. The Bnei Levi wanted to keep Korach in check. Ultimately, the fact that he was named after one of the Bnei Esav did not fare him well, did not do him well. Yaakov Avinu said, leave me out of this. You're not a Baldy like I'm a Baldy. I'm the real deal Baldy. You know, maybe a person comes into this world, they don't have as much sayar. You know, they're still, they belong to the, you know, the higher worlds. Person closer to that world. And ultimately, a person always has to keep the focus on what is important for us, and that is that our simcha and perks and kicks, says Shlomo HaMelech, Toiv Ma'at Beiras Hashem Me'oitzer Rav U'Mehubabai. Says Rabin Bechaye, one should be Sameach B'Chalkoi, be Mestapik B'Muad, V'lo Yis'ave HaMoisarois. And where do you get your perks? Yetiv Liboi Beiras Hashem. You want luxury? Try to figure out another detail of the Torah. Use that to satisfy your quest for more in this world. Thank you everybody for coming. Brachah v'atzlacha. Kanani v'nakasha oimer. Ratzah HaKadosh Baruch Hu. L'zakir says Yisrael. L'fikach himla Torah mitzvah shenemar.
You've just experienced another Torah class brought to you by TorahAnytime.com.